This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
Yes, it's Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We're taking you around the globe, one queer story at a time. And I am very pleased to be joined tonight in the Victorian Pride Centre by Alex.
Good evening. Like it or not, the media has incredible power. The power to amplify an issue or to silence one. The power to rally people behind a cause or fight against one. With that power comes great responsibility, the obligation to be fearless, factual, and fair. But when it comes to LGBTIQ issues, that is not always the reality.
One country that is tackling head-on the way that LGBTIQ people are seen in the media is Fiji. They have recently run a training and engagement workshop with journalists organised by the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network. Their CEO, Isekeli Vulevo, joined us to explain how it went. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
It was like very eye-opening for them, and it was also something very new for some of them. So we could sense resistance, maybe not resistance, but people just needed time to process, you know, what we were telling them, that for us, gender is not a binary. It occurs on a spectrum, and we told them this is not something that we are making up. It's reality. You look around, it exists.
There are quite a few ways that media can, whether intentionally or accidentally, harm members of the LGBTIQ community, whether it be misgendering, making fun of or stereotyping, or even pursuing direct attacks. The media has a powerful voice and a broad reach. To ensure the rainbow community in Fiji is fairly and accurately represented, the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network staged a training workshop on sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, sex characteristics and LGBT rights. We asked the CEO, Isekeli Vulevo, why they saw the need to run these training for media in Fiji.
First, there isn't a lot of articles that have been written about LGBTQIs in the media, like covering LGBTQI stories. So we thought of organizing this training to sort of sensitize the media and also motivate them and encourage them to also cover LGBTQI stories so that it can sort of visibilize our lived experiences and realities. The second being, like, when do they cover some stories in the media? There's often a misgendering when it comes to, like, a story for a transgender person. They usually misgender the person, although the trans person have clearly indicated to them their preferred pronouns. But somehow when it gets into the newsroom, there are other factors that come into play, including like what we discovered at our training was the policies of the organizations. But when we do ask about these policies, like which policy in particular stops them from using these pronouns, they said that it's often the editors or sub-editors that say that we follow what's in the birth certificate. So that sort of conversations came up when we were discussing about the reasons they do not use the preferred pronouns that are often proposed by subjects of interviews who identify as transgender persons. And the other reason we had wanted to conduct this training was we've seen that some media, particularly broadcast media, they often use sort of gay jokes, like LGBTQI-related stories, to create humor. So members of our community felt that the media should move away from that because it sort of further marginalizes LGBTQI community when they make fun of them and trivialize their experiences or their mannerisms or the way they express themselves. The other reason we had organized this training was also because of the rampant online homophobic and transphobic bullying that has been happening, and also this often is not the fault of the media. Like when they do publish articles about LGBTQI people and they share it on their social media platforms, it often gets attacked by people. Like there's a lot of homophobic and transphobic violence and discrimination, like the comments that are received. So this was something that we also discussed with the media, like how, what are some of the ways in which they can reduce further harm to LGBTQI people by filtering these comments or maybe blocking comments or using some sort of methodology to try and screen out these negative comments.
The stories that were being presented, were they giving both sides of an issue? Like, were they giving the rainbow community a voice?
Yes. So it's usually like press releases that we issue when we are saying that we are fighting for LGBTQI rights or that we are fighting for the protection and promotion of the human rights of LGBTQI persons. So those, even those type of press releases, it receives a lot of negative comments when it's posted on the social media pages of media organizations. And when they do publish them, the level of homophobic and transphobic violence and discrimination is so overwhelming. Yeah. And even government, like government pages, there's certain activities that have been organized by the Rainbow Pride Foundation, which is a national member affiliate based in Fiji, where they had partnered with government for the training of LGBTQI people on business entrepreneurship. The Line Ministry that partnered with them had published an article to showcase this. And I think there were like thousands of comments, like negative comments on the government page targeting the LGBTQI people and also government for why were they supporting LGBTQI persons.
Yeah, it's very, very challenging when people can post all that anonymously and the like. Tell us a bit more about the training itself. So what was actually involved in doing this training?
So we had a media and human rights consultant that assisted us in delivering this training. Of course, we were involved also in the development of the agenda for the training. And what we did also was we partnered with the Fijian Media Association. So the training was like a partnership kind of arrangement where we wanted the Fijian Media Association to take ownership of the key things that we would like to promote or the messages during this training so that this is something that can be sustained. So there was like presentations made, and there was also a lot of group work and plenary discussions and also group discussions. And we did talk about the human rights and also its linkages to LGBTQI, human rights or LGBTQI rights. So we started like from the international human rights framework, bringing it down to regional frameworks and those related to the media. And then we zeroed down to the national human rights framework, which sort of protects the rights of LGBTQI people. And we also took them through some terminologies related to SOGIESC, sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, and sex characteristics. We know that these terminologies are always evolving and it might be new to many of them. So we did do an exercise where we sort of broke down have simplified the definitions for these SOGIAS terminologies.
That's Isakeli Vulavo, the CEO of the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network, with us on Joy 94.9. Alex, I couldn't help thinking when he was talking about the broadcast media, you know, making jokes and sort of stereotyping the community, effectively using the LGBT community as a punchline, it made me think of this is the way Hollywood used to be.
Mm.
In films, the gay character either died or was the clown, you know, yes. It was the punchline. So it seems like that in Fiji and, you know, in broadcast media, that seems to be where they're still stuck.
Yeah. Right. Many parts of the world would still have that. And we know that we've moved on to some extent or evolved, but obviously we know that there are still issues at the media punching bags within our community. The media love to use. It's more now to do with gender identity and trans rights. So, yes.
And that deliberate, well, actually, he didn't say deliberate, misgendering of trans people being a particular issue, whether that was deliberate or whether it's just that lack of understanding, which hopefully something like this training course will help to solve.
Indeed.
Coming up, you'll find out if the training is making a real difference in Fiji. This is Worldwide Wave,
where our diverse communities can come together. Joy.
Hello, this is Wolfgang from Conchita-Wurst City, which is Vienna in Austria. You're listening to Worldwide Wave from Joy 94.9.
Now, we've had a message in. Thanks, Andrew, for your message. Can we please cover the homophobia by the Manly Seagulls rugby league team and the refusal to wear jerseys with rainbow stripes for their pride game, which is this weekend? He says it's particularly pertinent to tonight's episode as many of the players are Polynesian.
Yes.
Which is right. And the religious influence in Polynesian countries is usually quite quite high, it's very strong Christian beliefs.
Yes, much of which is imported by the colonial powers, but we've talked about that before on the show. Yes, and of course this is going to reignite the whole Falau debate. And look, you know,
it's interesting how rugby league seems to be quite a fair way behind AFL, and I would even say AFL is a fair way behind some other sports who've been, you know, even women's AFL was much more progressive than AFL. So there seems to be a real lag in rugby league land. And of course, the great irony, the first professional rugby league player to come out, Ian Roberts, played for the Manly Sea Eagles.
Yes, I heard him interviewed on the radio today, actually, and he is saying that he would love to be able to sit down with these particular eight players, is it?
Seven was the last count that I saw.
Seven, sorry. He'd like to sit down with the players because he feels it's just if you get to know people and just get to know their perspectives, it really is. It was a poorly handled situation by
mixed messages, though, because I certainly heard people say they weren't consulted, but equually there were claims about it's not fitting in with their religion. So if consultation took place, would that have changed anything? Maybe, maybe not. Be really interested in what other people think about this. Should players be able to refuse the right to wear a rainbow jersey in a pride match? Should the club just say, well, you're out, you're not playing. That's the game we're playing. Join in or take a seat. Now, tonight we're looking at Fiji, and most LGBTI organisations operate on little or no budgets. Therefore, seeking and accessing free editorial in the media is a vital resource. But when the media either isn't interested in presenting queer people or doesn't present the community correctly, it can cause harm. Isakeli Vulavo from the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network has been explaining that they partner with the Fijian Media Association to deliver the training for media in Fiji. We asked how important this was in getting journalists to attend and to take the issues of LGBT people seriously.
I think because of the nature of their work, so we had to do half-day trainings, like the morning sessions, because I think the afternoon were like deadlines for them, so they had to run off and try and do their work and meet the deadlines. So the attendance was a bit sporadic. So people were coming in at different times, but the president of the Fijian Media Association was there. So she's made sure that she really values this partnership and she wants to see us taking it forward, maybe develop a sort of a media guidelines on how to report on LGBTQI issues and persons to ensure that it does not bring any further harm to them. So this is one of the outcomes.
That's great. That's great. Was there anything that the journalists or the participants said or did that surprised you?
Maybe not surprised, but I think when we were discussing SOGESC, it was like very eye-opening for them. And it was also something very new for some of them. So we could sense resistance, maybe not resistance, but people just needed time to process, you know, what we were telling them, that for us, gender is not a binary. It occurs on a spectrum, and we told them this is not something that we are making up. It's reality. You look around, it exists in our society. But somehow, when we were growing up, like a religion and some cultural and traditional myths had sort of forced society, including themselves and even ourselves while growing up, to think that you can only be a man or woman. But we shared with them our own experiences that this is not true. And like for them, some of them, they've seen it themselves. They have relatives or even close family members who are part of the LGBTQI community. And then also we did talk about the fluidity of SOGI. So some of these things, it was a bit hard for them to accept because of the entrenched knowledge that they have built over the years on the gender binary, you know, patriarchy, and you can only be one of two. So those sort of mental attitudes we had to break down. But I must say that they appreciated the knowledge that they gained, and it sort of helped them understand why LGBTQI people are the way they are. You know, that for most LGBTQI, we were born, it was not a choice for us. So these reflections and open discussions, I think, was one session where we really spent a lot of time and where we saw a lot of interest from the journalists.
I realize it's very early days. You know, this has only recently been held. But have you noticed any change as yet in media reporting or media understanding of issues?
Yes, there was an article on LGBT that was written by one of the, I think, Fiji Sun. So the pronouns that was used, they were using they and the name of the person. So they didn't use she or he of their trans person. So we were really pleased to note that, you know, these little changes are happening, and that we are so sure that these journalists, when they go back to their newsrooms, they will be pushing, you know, for these, and they will be discussing it with their sub-editors and editors, because they told us for most of the editors, like when we take it to the newsroom, we would follow what the subject have told us to do, like which pronoun to use. But when we send it to our sub-editors or the editors, they are the ones who usually tell us to change it. So we did discuss at the training that perhaps they should just use they/them, or try and use the name of the person as much as they can in the article. So that was one of the results that we found after the, like immediately after print, like 1 week or 2 weeks after that, they did publish an article on LGBT and they had used the friendly pronouns there.
Your organisation works right across the Pacific. Is this something that you would like to take to other countries where the same sorts of misreporting or there isn't as much visibility for LGBT people in the media?
Yes, definitely. So that's something that we've discussed in-house, is that we need to spread this out to other Pacific Island countries so that they also benefit, you know, from this particular training, and that we can also change some of the way they are reporting to ensure that it does not bring any further harm to LGBTQI persons in their country.
Speaking from Suva, that's Isakeli Vulavo from the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network with us on Joy 94.9. I'm not surprised either that there was that, not confusion, but I guess trying to get your head around the idea. If you've been taught one thing from a kid, that there's boys and there's girls, when you're presented with something else, it's going to take a little while for them to think about that. And I think these sorts of training opportunities are really good, where they can meet some real people who have a lived experience of whatever diversity within the community. So I think there's some really good things to have come out of this.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's a learning process. We know it's often not out of willful ignorance. Just people, unfortunately, it takes time. You know, we've all been guilty of doing this from time to time, using the wrong pronoun or confusing, making assumptions.
Absolutely. Even here at Joy, sometimes we do that and we have to sort of relearn ourselves. Yeah. The only thing I was thinking was that he was mentioning the importance of editors and sub-editors as being the ones who were sort of the blockage, and I don't think they were actually at this training, so I wonder if that might still cause some issues going forward.
Yeah.
Interesting to find out. Coming up, we're going to go a little bit broader and discuss where LGBT rights are moving in the Pacific region. This is Worldwide Wave.
joy.org.au. Diversity has a new home.
There are many ways for people to express their gender, including being non-binary. Someone who's non-binary doesn't exclusively identify as a man or a woman. They might be a bit of both, something outside that, or no gender at all. Their gender might even change with time. Non-binary isn't blue or pink, it's every colour of the rainbow. Want to learn more? Check out Joy's Inclusion and Diversity Training. Visit joy.org.au/services.
This is Dede Utomo from Kaya Nusantara in Surabaya, Indonesia, speaking on Worldwide Wave.
A special hello to everybody listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcasts automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or iTunes or your favourite podcast platform. And please do leave us a review. We love to hear them.
The world's longest running radio show dedicated to international LGBTIQ news and current affairs. This is Worldwide Wave from Australia's Rainbow Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
Now, the Pacific region has had 7 countries that still criminalise homosexuality. That number may reduce to 6 as the Prime Minister of the Cook Islands declared that if re-elected in August, his government will decriminalise homosexuality. Such a change is a key aim for advocacy organisation the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network. We asked their CEO, Isakeli Vulavo, to tell us more about their organisation and what they do across the Pacific region.
The PSGDM is a regional network of LGBTQI organisations in the Pacific. The Secretariat is based here in Suva. And we have affiliates in 14 Pacific Island countries, namely American Samoa, Cook Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, Fiji, Kiribati, Nauru, Palau, Papua New Guinea, Marshall Islands. We have them in Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga, Tuvalu, and Vanuatu. And there are also ongoing efforts and negotiations with the other French territories in the Pacific, like other LGBTQ organizations in the US and French territories in the Pacific. And our mission mainly includes advocating for resourced and sustainable LGBTQ organizations at country level. Unfortunately, in the Pacific, LGBTQ organizations are not funded by governments, so we heavily rely on donors. And in the Pacific, only the PSGDM has co-funding from the New Zealand government. Our member organizations in other countries, they solely rely on their volunteers to run those organizations. So the need for resources is so huge within the LGBTQI sector in the Pacific. We also push and advocate for increased political commitment at the regional level in all spheres of the lives of LGBTQI. So we push for SOGIESC inclusion in climate change, disaster risk reduction, in health, in education, in basically all the sectors. So we try and advocate this through the regional Pacific Islands Forum. We also work with our countries to try and push for law reforms, particularly the removal of punitive laws that still criminalize LGBTQI people. So in the Pacific, we still have 7 countries, Cook Islands, Kiribati, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga, and Tuvalu that still criminalize LGBTQI people. So this is one of the major focus of the PSGDN, is to push for the decriminalization of LGBTQI in all these countries before 2015.
Of course, Cook Islands is potentially going to change, or they've certainly announced their intentions to change the laws. What's the thing that most excites you about the future of LGBT rights in the Pacific?
In the Polynesian sub-region, LGBTQI people are generally accepted. Fortunately, in the Melanesian region, which includes PNG, Fiji, Vanuatu, and Solomon Islands, it can be dangerous being LGBT, being too risky, particularly in Solomon Islands and PNG. In Micronesia, they are also somewhat accepted in their communities. We are really hoping is for the decriminalization. We want LGBTQI to be decriminalized in all Pacific Island countries. Among that, other things, being able to legally adopt, like same-sex couples being able to legally adopt or being able to inherit their partner's inheritance, and having access to other gender-affirming facilities, particularly for trans people. In addition to that, we are also trying to sensitize government, like across all the government machinery. And also, there's not a lot of research data or strategic information available on LGBTQI in the Pacific. It's one of the most under-researched communities. So we are trying also to conduct as many researches as we can to have as much data as we can to inform our policies and programs. We're also trying to work with faith-based organizations and cultural institutions, because this is often identified by LGBTQI people as institutions where homophobia and transphobia are sort of cultivated. And we also do represent the LGBTQI community in global spaces, regional spaces.
Mr. Kelly, in many ways, you are the face of the LGBT community in many instances for the Pacific. How did you get involved in LGBTIQ advocacy?
I guess because of my personal experience as an LGBTQI person myself. So I identify as genderqueer, gay, genderqueer, Itaukei person, or indigenous activist or defender of the Pacific. And I've always had this strong passion for human rights work, to work in the human rights sector, because of my negative experiences growing up as an LGBTQI indigenous person here in Fiji. And I was sent to a male-only boarding school where my experiences of violence and discrimination were sort of exacerbated. And even now in this position, like only the families, the people that know me, they will show me respect because they know my professional status. But in other social spaces where they do not know me, they just see me as an LGBTQI person, so I still receive the same level of discrimination and violence as any other LGBTQI person that they are not familiar with. So this is sort of the drive that I have, and the passion that sort of drives me to be involved in this work.
Wonderful, and you are doing great work, not just in Fiji, but across the Pacific. Isakeli Vulavo, CEO of the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network, thank you so much for speaking with us on World Wide Wave.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt.
And they're doing a really great job there. I think this is a really proactive way they can make long-term change for the local LGBT community.
Yeah, and it's not this outside
imposition. Not people telling them what to do.
It breaks this sort of dynamic of this idea that, again, it's the Western developed world
trying to impose its, you know, this old defensive reaction. This is the grassroots, local. It's good to see the kind of this sort of cross-Pacific sort of cooperation.
Connection, you influencing, know. Yep, yeah, absolutely.
It's making slow but steady and inroads.
Look, Cook Islands, we look forward to bringing you that good news when it happens. The Prime Minister's got to get re-elected before the law will change. They've completely rewritten their Crimes Act. I was just looking up because I remember chatting to Cook Island, the person, Tatriana, in Cook Islands, about this. They were working on it. Mm. And I thought, oh, you know, it was 2 or 3 years ago. 2016. So for the very least 6 years, they've been plugging away to influence the parliament to change
that,
the laws.
I remember that story.
Yeah. All good things take time.
Yes. Anyway, progress, slow arch, as they say.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Kia ora, my name is Tatriana and I'm from the Cook Islands LGBT organisation, BTR Association, on the World Wide Web.
Listen live or on demand from wherever you are in the world. Stream us live on joy.org.au or subscribe on iTunes or your favourite podcast platform to World Wide Wave.
A huge thank you to our guest tonight, Isakeli Vullevaux, the CEO of the Pacific Sexual and Gender Diversity Network. You can follow their great work at psgdn.org or find them on Facebook.
And thank you to everyone who's interacted with us on Facebook, Mayad, Claire, Jennifer, Liam and heap more. And that's Facebook this past week. And that's W3Joy on Facebook.
And our wonderful behind-the-scenes teams, podcaster Peter and social media master Dean, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/World Wide Wave, or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.